We appreciate your interest in the community and coming out to hear this presentation regarding the fiscal analysis if we were to consolidate the two districts together. I'm David Aranda. I am the interim general manager for the Kensington Police Protection Community Service District. I'll let Mary introduce herself.
Good morning. Mary Morris Mayorga. I'm the general manager for the Kensington Fire Protection District, and we're here with Dmitry Semenov of Ridgeline Municipal Strategies, and he's here to make the presentation on the fiscal study for the consolidated districts model. So with that, I'm going to let Dmitry take over. We'll have question and answer, and the question and answer would be focused on the study that he's here presenting. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dmitry Semenov, Ridgeline Municipal Strategies. We are a financial consulting firm, and the districts asked us to prepare what they call a fiscal study. And a fiscal study is a document that looks into the financial condition of public agencies and also considers possible financial implications of those districts staying independent versus consolidating. We will go through the slides let's see. And afterwards, you can ask questions. And so what we did is we did a very in-depth analysis of the two agencies. And that's all that we were prepared to speak about is, we only understand the financial numbers. Any questions about the future decisions or something like that, that should be directed to the agencies themselves. We can only speak to the nature of our analysis. So in terms of how the analysis went, we did several presentations of the results of the study. First, we did the individual analysis on each district. And on August 8th of 2024, we presented the analysis results for the police district. And on September 18th, 2024, we presented the analysis of the fire districts. Once those once the analysis was presented and the districts have had a chance to review, evaluate, understand what we put together and signed off on the numbers, then we went on to do a consolidation analysis, and that was presented to the districts in a joint board meeting on November 7th. So the goals of the analysis is really first, to take a look at the districts on a standalone basis, understand what are the different sensitive areas in the finances of the districts, and then look at what the future may hold for the districts if they stay independent versus if they consolidate. We do not advocate any specific course of action. We simply provide the information for the districts to make the decision. Okay. So first we're going to look at the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District and what they may look like if they stay independent. In our analysis in general, kind of the approach that we take is more conservative. We try not to get too aggressive with revenue projections. We also try to be very conservative on the cost assumptions. So for example, some of the things that we assumed is at all times, all districts are employing the entire amount of staff that they need to have. And staffing is one of the largest cost components of the agencies. So we're assuming no vacancies and we're assuming very moderate property tax annual revenue increases. And property tax is the primary source of funding for both districts. So just trying to make sure that there's plenty of room for error in the analysis. Okay, so we're going to start with the Police Protection and Community Services District first. So the district is organized around four separate funds. There's the general fund, and the general fund takes in the general revenues of the district, which primarily is the property tax. It also covers the general and administrative costs of the district. And because the administrative cost is a very small component of what the district does, the general fund generates a very healthy surplus every single year. Then there's a separate police fund, and that has all the police functions of the district. That's a separate accounting. And because most of the revenues that cover the police service are the general property tax, those revenues are accounted for in the general fund, not on the police fund. So the police fund is running at an operating deficit every single year. And that deficit is covered by the general fund. A similar situation is happening in the parks. It operates in an annual operating deficit, which is funded by the general fund. And then the fourth fund is the waste management fund. And that's a what they call an enterprise fund. It's a fund that collects its own revenues. So over a long term, it's expected to generate at a break even. It generates a small surplus, but that surplus eventually will go away in the types of expenses that are incurred every few years, for example, updating studies, preparing reports, and those types of things. So those are the four funds of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District. So what we did is we ran projections for every single one of the funds, and then we consolidated the numbers into one stream of cash flows to see what the district is looking like over long term. So, and this table summarizes the 4 years of the four last years of operations, 21, 22, 23, and 24 fiscal years. And the fiscal years run through June 30 of each year. So when we say fiscal year ending 2024, that was the year from July 1st, 23 through June 30, 2024, right? So we had 4 years of historical data that was analyzed based on the audits and the actual financial information. And then we did a 10-year projection going all the way to 2034. And looking at the 4 years of historical performance, the district most of the time operates at a moderate surplus. There was 1 year when there was a small shortfall where some of the reserves were used. But in general, the district is very well run fiscally. It doesn't generate a whole lot of surplus, but it's positive every single year. And then looking at the forecast, making the assumptions for moderate property tax increases and a full, fully employed workforce for the district, what we saw was the district is projected to operate at a very slight fiscal shortfall every year. So on the revenues of about, close to $5 million, we're coming out with about $100,000 in shortfall. And looking at the prior history of the district, they're able to manage their budget very, very conservatively and responsibly. So that shortfall can easily be covered by operational management. So over a long term, the big conclusion is the Police Protection and Community Services District is able to maintain a very healthy position without generating any surplus, but kind of making sure that all the services that they're providing are fully covered. So kind of the big outtakes for the next decade for the Police Protection and Community Services District is it's expected to operate near break even while continuing to provide the same level of services and facilities. Okay. However, what that means is in order for the district to take on any major initiatives, such as adding a building, expanding services, making any major renovations to any of the facilities, the operating budget of the district does not allow for anything major like that. So if they were to go and take on a large project for the community, they would have to go to the citizens for additional tax revenues, right? Whether it's a parcel tax or an assessment or something along those lines. Without additional funding, they're not able to expand what they're doing in any shape or form. Okay, so that's the Police Protection and Community Services District side. So then we did the same process for the Fire Protection District. And the Fire Protection District, the way they operate is pretty much all the services are outsourced under a contract to the City of El Cerrito. All the employees, all the firefighters, the fire chief and everybody below him, they are the employees of the city. And the district pays an annual contract fee to the city to run the police services. And there is a very limited administrative function that is covered on the fire district side. Everything else is done by the city. So looking on the kind of same process, the district over the last 4 years has been able to generate a very healthy annual surplus of roughly on average about $1 million per year. And going forward, making sure the same very conservative assumptions are utilized, being very cautious on the revenue side and assuming full cost burden on the expense side, the district is still projected to generate about $1 million per year in fiscal surplus. Okay, so where what we saw on the police and community services side is essentially break even. On the police side, there's very healthy surplus for in terms of funding to the tune of about $1 million per year. Fire, yes. Thank you. So on the fire side, there is a surplus of about $1 million per year. So, that surplus provides very substantial financial flexibility for the district to take on any additional services, any capital projects. What I have to highlight is the fire protection district side just completed the public safety building. So that was a very large project for a small agency like that. And looking into the future, so far there has not been any decisions made in terms of what future large capital projects should be undertaken. That's something that the board will have to investigate further. So our analysis assumes that right now there is no significant need for additional large capital expenses. So if that changes, some of the surplus will have to be adjusted. But right now, we're not assuming that any major capital initiatives are projected to be undertaken by the police, by the fire protection district. Okay, so then the next step was take a look at, so the police side is break even, the fire side is a healthy surplus. What happens if the two districts consolidate, right? If they merge together? And all this analysis, it's not us doing our own number crunching in a vacuum. We spent hours and hours and hours interviewing the management of the districts, the general managers, the fire chief, the police chief, looking into pretty much everywhere under every line item of their budget, of their expense records, trying to understand what is driving the trends for the different cost factors. What are the revenues? How they're impacted, what can change, right? So the result of that was a joint analysis. What happens if the two districts consolidate? What will the staffing, the org chart look like? We're assuming that right now, no expansion of services through the consolidation. So whatever the districts are doing individually, they will continue doing on a consolidated basis. There is no reduction of services, but there is also no expansion of services, just comparing apples to apples. And so what we found is if the districts consolidate, very conservative assumptions, we're looking at potential average annual savings of about $141,000 per year. And this is in 2026 fiscal year dollars. So we took the 2025 numbers, adjusted them for 1 year of inflation. So in next year's dollars, we're assuming annual operating savings due to consolidation those expenses are assumed to be about $56,000. Those are different studies, legal documents, things like that. And that does not include the time that both district staff and the boards have committed to putting in. There's going to be a very significant effort if they choose to proceed with the consolidation. And a lot of that effort, a lot of that cost will be borne by the staff and the boards of the districts in terms of their working time. So as I mentioned, we're not assuming any changes to the police, parks, and waste management funds. We're projecting a separate fund for the fire services, So right now, the fire district is operating under one fund. We're assuming that we separated the general administrative functions into the general fund and split the fire into a separate fund. And for the purpose of the analysis, this does not necessarily have to do anything with the reality or the specific timeline, but looking at our numbers, we're assumed that the consolidation takes place on July 1st, 2025. So the first day of the fiscal year. And then we developed a 9-year financial projections that are based on the projections that were developed for the individual districts. So the consolidated district, the way we're modeling it, will consist of 5 different funds. The general fund, same thing, collecting all the property tax revenues and covering the administrative expenses. The police fund, fire fund, and parks fund, which all 3 of them do not have any significant independent revenue sources. They have certain property tax assessments that are specific to police or to fire service, but that's about it. So all 3 of those funds operate under a fiscal shortfall every year, which is funded by the general fund. And the waste management fund continues to operate at break-even. So these are the 9-year projections. So we're looking at a very healthy surplus, again, of roughly about $1 million. There's a couple of years where in 2028 and 2031, where the fire district fund, they set aside money every year to fund replacement of their apparatus. And fire engines are not anything but cheap. So there's a big, in 2031, you see where the orange line, which is the expenses, it goes above the revenues. And that's the purchase of a very large fire engine. So everything else is very well balanced. And the district is beginning with the initial annual surplus of about $900,000 and eventually increasing to almost $1.4 million. Okay, so the next step was to compare the results of the separate operations versus the consolidated operations. So if the districts are staying independently, right, and this is more of a thought of what does it mean for the community, right? So if the districts stay independent, taking the small shortfall on the police side versus the surplus on the fire side, you know, we're looking at about $780,000 in the first year of combined fiscal surplus versus $900,000 on a consolidated basis. So in the first year of the consolidation, the consolidated operations are saving about $120,000 for the community. And that continues to be the kind of the norm going all the way to by 2034. We're projecting the savings for the community to be about $290,000 per year. So, and what does it mean for the fund balances? How much money does it actually add up to in terms of the reserves? How much cash and reserves do the districts maintain? So if they stay independent, the consolidated reserves for 2026 would add up to about $10 million. And by 2034, they would be about $15 million versus $10 million for the consolidated district in the beginning, but going to $17 million by 2034. So essentially through the consolidation, the districts are able to achieve the combined savings over the next 9 years of about $1.8 million for the community. Okay. So, what are the key expected fiscal outcomes of the consolidation? We're projecting that the annual operating surplus will increase anywhere from $120,000 to $290,000 per year. And it gets larger as the time goes by. And that's a very conservative estimation. The combined reserve balance is projected to increase by $1.8 million over 9 years. The district will be able to, the consolidated district will be able to maintain permanent full-time staff that includes a general manager, a finance manager, and HR, and public safety coordinator. And it will be able to significantly reduce reliance on outside consultants, which tend to be pretty expensive. One board, which means lower costs, more efficient workflows, and streamlined governance for the community. And also consolidation of community tax dollars for greater funding flexibility, right? Where right now, on the police side, they're very limited in terms of what they're able to do. And there's a surplus on the fire district side. Consolidation brings the community funds together, and there is more discretion in how the funds can be deployed wherever they're needed. Other expected improvements are greater operating efficiency and elimination of redundancy. There's a lot of functions that currently are done by both districts individually. There's a simplified public process. Instead of two board meetings, there's one board meeting per year. And there's easier board member recruitment. What we're seeing in a lot of communities throughout the state is there's less and less people willing to volunteer very large chunks of their time for public service, and a lot of boards are struggling to fill the vacancies. So having one board makes making sure that you have a fully a full board at all times significantly easier. However, on there are some issues that need to be considered, right? So there is obviously a one-time cost of consolidation, which is estimated about $56,000 per year. One board will have a greater responsibility, right? It's right now you have a board that really understands the police and parks and waste management side, and another board that fully understands the fire side. So when you bring the two boards into one, everybody will have to keep track of more things. So that's something that needs to be kept in mind. So another thing is, as we mentioned on the Police Protection Community Services District side, we're projecting a small annual shortfall, and it really is dependent on the management of the district to make sure that they're operating fiscally responsibly. When there's a consolidation and there's additional funding coming from the fire side of things, we want to make sure that the pressure to maintain fiscal resiliency and fiscal discipline is not lost in the greater flow of funds, right? And also, we want to make sure to highlight that a lot of the surplus funding that we're projecting for the fire protection district side is also needs to be viewed in the context that there has not been any significant fire protection capital projects initiatives that have been identified, right? So we want to make sure to highlight that the surplus fire funding is viewed in the overall context before that's redirected to other uses. The fire priorities need to be taken into consideration. So that's really the summary of our analysis. There is a very thick report with a lot of numbers and tables that if you have a hard time falling asleep at night, you're more than welcome to start diving through. So, and I can answer any questions. And again, the questions that I can answer is only what's related to our work. We cannot comment on any decisions that would be subject to the approval of the board of directors. Yes. So let's.
I'm going to walk around with the mic.
Who did you point to first?
Gentleman in the back.
Thank you. I'm not really sure if there is any opposition to uniting the police and the fire departments, because to me, common sense tells me, based on what I have read, it's cheaper, it's better, and it is the best thing for the community by having these two groups working in the same district, working together, helping each other. So I don't understand what are the negative aspects of doing that. Anybody could answer this one. But also something different here, like everybody here, I have been watching the fires in Southern California, and lots of the problems that could have been avoided is vegetation. So many trees, so many bushes, so many dead branches and everything else. I think the board should hold a meeting to address this issue, the vegetation problems and the dangers they pose in terms of fires. Thank you.
Right. This is the slide where we talked about the downsides, potential downsides, right? And that's one of the things that we're highlighting is the fire district needs to make sure they identify long-term strategic goals that are currently not covered by their budget. And before any reallocation of funds takes place, you know, in the consolidation, should the consolidation proceed, would have to make sure that those priorities are addressed.
Thank you for the summary. So the way I'm seeing it now is the way the structure is now, if there's a shortfall on the police side, they're going to have to go to the voters to get additional revenues, or they're going to have to cut services. And under consolidation, those revenues would be combined, and decisions of the board could be to finance that out of the surplus. So the money's already coming out of the taxpayer, and this would help to alleviate future demands for increase in taxes from your presentation. I wonder if you agree with that.
So that is a true statement. The fire side is generating very significant fiscal surplus, where the police side does not have any room to take on any additional projects. So to the extent that on the fire side, the surplus is not needed, that can certainly be utilized for the benefit of the police and parks. Yes, that's a true assessment.
Did you have your hand up?
Yeah. Okay. A question about neighbor policy and the latest information that you can give me on the clearing of greens around the houses. I recently cleared mine. I'm looking to my neighbors to do theirs, but so far I haven't heard from them. Any suggestions?
So that is not something that we can speak to. You would have to address those questions to the fire district. Because we only did the financial analysis. So that's the only thing that we can comment on.
So that would be something that you could attend a board meeting, or you can listen to a board meeting for the Fire Protection District, or check our website also for information on that.
If El Cerrito is, this is probably financial, if El Cerrito is part of the Kensington Fire Department, how much funding do they actually give? And why does the fire department have so much surplus? I missed that probably in your talk.
So the there is a contract between the city and the fire district. And the contract spells out very specific for cost allocation, how the costs are shared by the city and by the district. And fire services is interesting. If you start diving into how firefighters operate, it's a very fluid system, right? So just because you have a fire station in one place doesn't mean that a call from Kensington will only get serviced by that fire station. They constantly have to balance call volumes and the expertise and the staffing and all those things. So usually what happens, there's a lot of interaction between different fire departments. And in this case, the El Cerrito and Kensington is covered by essentially one organization, but then there's also other fire departments in the area. So, and they all cooperate. So you can't say that, oh, this is our fire station and this is our cost and that's the full universe. So, and that's why the El Cerrito's fire department's budget is allocated. There's been an allocation of, we believe, we have agreed, we being the district and the city, that this portion of the certain costs will be covered by the district, and this portion will be covered by the city. So that's how the allocation takes place. So the fire department of the city develops a budget, and then it's allocated to the district based on the formulas. Then you have the property tax revenues that go to the district, to the fire district. And the district uses those revenues to pay the contract fee. And right now, the revenues are coming in, you know, approximately $1 million greater than the costs that the district is incurring under the cost sharing agreement with the city.
It's my understanding that this agreement on how the property taxes split between the two districts was determined in 1969. And it just so happened that at that time, the police board was very low staffed. And so there has been since 1969 a mismatch, which is part of this problem. Question for you on the financials. What percentage of property tax increase did you assume? I know you said it was conservative, but exactly was it?
Yeah, we assume 3.5% per year. Historically, it's been to the tune of anywhere from 5 to 10%. And this is driven by Prop 13 that some of you may not know. The way property taxes work in California is as long as the same individual or the same owner keeps a property, their annual property tax cannot go by more than 2% per year. Okay, so the market values may be going up, but the property taxes can never go up by more than 2% per year. However, when the property changes hands, it gets reassessed at the new sale price, and that's where the new owner will pay a much greater property tax than the prior owner. So a lot of this increase that we've seen, because there is very little new development that's happening in Kensington. So a lot of this, the value increase is due to the properties being sold and being reassessed at a higher property tax rates. So we're not, when we're saying 3.5% property tax increase, it doesn't mean that everybody's property tax bills will go up by 3.5%. It's your property tax will continue to follow the Prop 13 rules, but because inevitably every year you have certain property sales, that and the property may have been assessed at a much lower value, right? Let's say $500,000, and then sold for $2 million, and all of a sudden there is an additional $1.5 million, tax base that's gets assessed, and that's what's driving the very significant increases to the property tax revenue. So, but we, just to be conservative. And there's been a lot of conversations about how the housing market is very stagnant, because with the new mortgage rates, very few people are willing to sell their homes and move somewhere else, because if they take out a new mortgage, it'll be at 2.5-3 times the interest rate that they're paying now. So a lot of people are, even though they would like to move somewhere else, but they kind of are forced to stay in their existing house. So we're under the assumption that there's going to be less resales going forward. And to be more conservative, we projected much smaller property tax increases. However, if the trend continues, then the fiscal surplus will be increasing even more.
Thank you. One question on the cost side, and then I'll hand off. The $141,000 you project to save, mm-hmm. I know you mentioned there's some redundancies and some reduction in contractors. What would you say is the biggest driver of that 141?
Probably the biggest one is the change of the org structure. Because right now, both districts incur very significant expenses in outside consultants. And by having a full-time general manager and having a full-time finance HR manager and a public safety coordinator, they'll be able to eliminate a lot of the outside consulting costs. And while their payroll will go up, but there will be very substantial savings on the consultant side. So got that's it. Probably one of the key drivers.
Yeah, thank you. One more, then I promise to hand off. On the waste management, my understanding is that when I pay Bayview Refuse, I'm paying enough with all of my neighbors to cover the cost. What is it that the district has to pay?
So the district collects what they call a franchise fee, and it's shared with the county. And that covers anything that's administrative related to keep managing the service, making sure that the Bayview contract is administered, that if they start misbehaving, they can bring in somebody else. So it's the overall management of the waste you know, waste collection and recycling operations. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's, and I'll just expand upon it a little bit. An example would be this year we're in the midst of renewing or looking at renewing a contract. So there would be costs associated with my work and with legal's work on working with Bayview. We're, as you all know, I hope you all know, we're trying to work with Bayview on getting a newsletter out. We find that to be the least expensive way for us to do that. So there's cooperation there. But the printing expense on when we let all of you know about the slight increase that Bayview has the right in their contract, that was something we bear. So the expenses typically year to year are minimal. But what I want to emphasize based on your question is that that is, as Dimitri pointed out, an enterprise fund. So the money collected on the franchise fees has to stay in the account for waste. We can't take, oh, we made an extra $20,000 and let's move it over to the parks. We're not allowed by law to do that. So right now, as Dimitri pointed out, we're at about a break even. As time goes on, will it cost more to oversee that? I doubt it. Will it cost less? That's to be seen. It's not a big number, and any of you that are interested in those details are welcome to contact me for more information on that. Yeah. As a director or as a resident?
Well, can you clarify that we're making money because history?
Well, when we use the term make money, that scares people because they think we're going to be profiting off of solid waste. And so, but it's on a positive side. I think Dimitri showed that.
Term break even, it sounds to me like.
Well, what I'm trying to point out is in year to year, let's say we end up putting $10,000 in a given fiscal year into that account, as noted. And then the following year, let's say it's another $10,000 and then another $10,000. Well, at some point in time, we may want to look at what do we want to do with that money? Do we need it for a capital program on waste management? Or do we need it to discuss with Bayview about the rates and the franchise fees? But at right now, we're not in that position. We're at break even, basically. We're making a little bit of money, but it's staying in the pot in case there's additional expenses.
Hold on a second. Let me say it so everyone can hear you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I know that we have a contract every year it goes up, and it's a minimal amount, but how long is that contract for with Bayview? Thank you.
I'm going to answer that in two different avenues. One is that the current contract is being negotiated as we speak. But with that said, there'll still be some kind of stipulation in regard to the consumer price index and allowing Bayview to increase prices based on the consumer price index. But with that said, the history here in Kensington has been from time to time to do a rate study, with the area that the local area here of what solid waste rates are in the entire area. And it also has historically done an audit of Bayview's cost versus profit, bottom line, basically. We attempted to get a consultant to do that. And the two consultants we were told that exist in the state of California declined. So, and they're really busy because of some current legislation going on. So we'll probably, as part of your question, we'll probably address that. in another couple of years to see what Bayview's profit is in relation to what they're charging the residents. I would hope, this is a little plug that I'm going to give, I would hope that all of you would find that their services are worth the money you're paying in relation to the. I have found, based on my experience in being in other districts and other areas, I've found them to be very accommodating in our various aspects of recycling and our cleanup day every year. But it's a good question, because if that keeps going up, it impacts each of you, and it's our responsibility to monitor that with them. Okay? You're welcome.
Bayview is excellent.
Thanks.
Hi, I just wanted to start by saying I've been following this process from the beginning. I've been incredibly impressed with Dimitri and your firm on the level of detail, the understandability of your even detailed reports, not to mention your summary reports. They've really uncovered so many questions this community has had for so long. I'm particularly enamored by the $140,000 of savings every year by the districts combining. I mean, that's, you know, $1.4 million in 10 years, which goes by in a flash. You know, that was extremely impressive. And for me, I personally, the social issue of having one point of contact for people who are involved in the community makes it life so much easier and more understandable and efficient. So that's great. I do have one question after all that, which is, in your presentation, you talked about the Parks Fund, the Police Fund, and the Fire Fund, that are the special funds, being in a deficit. What that word is funny to me, because it seems like they were only created because the general fund could not support all the activities that were desired, and there seemed like supplemental funds versus deficit funds. So that's the part that it sort of implies that they should be covering all the expenses when you say they're in deficit for the Parks Fund. So how has that happened?
So first of all, thank you very much for the kind words. Appreciate it. If people are familiar, if you're familiar with accounting, right, a lot of times if you have your own business or an organization, you have one set of books. The way the government finance works is there's even a special field of accounting called fund accounting. In the government funds, government accounting, each function is usually broken out into a separate fund, and it's accounted for in that separate fund. And a lot of times how the general services are paid for, and the general services would be fire, police, parks, those types of things. They're funded through property taxes. And the property taxes are what they call a general revenue. So the agency gets the property tax revenue without any instructions from the county on how those property tax revenues have to be allocated. Okay, so it really is at the discretion of the agency that receives the funding how to spend the money. So property tax revenues, being general revenues, are accounted for in the general fund. And the general fund is sort of the catch-all fund. It covers the admin functions in terms on the cost side, but then that's it. There's no other costs that are there, major costs that are hitting the general fund. So that surplus, the big surplus, you know, you take all the big pot of money that's coming from property taxes and you put it in the general fund, and you subtract a little bit of operating expenses that, you know, the general management, and you have a big surplus, right? That surplus is what's then allocated to the funding different functions. But then because of the requirement to keep track of costs for different functions in separate funds, you have the structure of police fund, park fund, and fire fund. So that's where the costs are kept. And there's some specific revenues. For example, there are assessments for, you know, for police, for fire, and for park services within Kensington. That's also in your property tax bill. So those are going directly into those funds. So, but those revenues are very small comparing to the costs that the funds are incurring. So what happens is, in terms of the money flows, is the general fund has to make sure that there is enough funding in those three funds, and they transfer the money from the general fund into the specific fund. But because of the how the the accounting functions is, you have a big surplus on the general fund side and a very large shortfalls on the individual services fund side. And but then what we do is we consolidate the numbers into one set of cash flows to see what's really going on a combined basis. So that's really, it's much more of an accounting function, but because of how the government accounting works and how the report is structured to reflect that structure, that allocation of costs, we want to make sure to clarify that it's if somebody opens the report and they say, oh, the fire is losing, X number of millions of dollars per year. Well, not true. It's only comparing to the dedicated revenues, but then there is a very large chunk of money in the general fund that is meant to supplement the shortfall. Does that make sense? It's just, it's a funny thing about government accounting. Yeah.
Let me add something. For most of us, that word could be mistaken, and so I would encourage any of you, if whether contacting Mary or myself, if you want to see specifically how much revenue is dedicated to your assessments on your property tax bill, for police or for fire for that matter, and then how much more of the property tax goes toward the police department, we're happy to share that with you. The other thing that I want to let you all know is that I learned the hard way many years ago, by doing this type of accounting, if the state ever says we're going to try to help you out, police departments, or we're going to try to help you out, fire departments, showing a deficit in the specific fund or the specific account works to our advantage to try to take advantage of those types of money that both the federal and the state government will provide from time to time. Did you have something to say?
Searched for the link unsuccessfully, and took me a while. But just, I'm sure that everybody's aware, with the fires in LA, there couldn't be a more auspicious moment for us to come together as one operation, because it's clear that in any disaster, we function, police and fire, together. And just doing this now, I want to thank the board so much. It's just so relevant. I'm looking at the wind blowing out there and thinking how vulnerable we are. And I just couldn't say how important this is to the community. Thank you.
Yeah, very true.
Yes, it's a little bit off topic perhaps, but on the subject of brush clearing, Johnny Valenzuela, our emergency preparedness coordinator, has been very active in getting the FireWise communities organized. And we are now recognized almost completely across the ridge. Those communities are organized to get the neighborhoods to clear brush, to prepare their homes so that they won't burn in case there's a wildfire. And if the UE on the ridge is prepared, the rest of you might be in better shape, but everybody should think about it. I have one question. There's a surplus in the fire district budget annually. I imagine that has probably been spent down on the remodel. Is there anything in there currently?
So the surplus is after accounting the costs of the project. So the way the project was funded, it was a combination of the district's reserves, as well as ongoing revenues, as well as there was a $2 million loan that was taken out. So that's the surplus that we see, that's after accounting for those costs. So this page right here shows the ending fund balances. As of projected fiscal year 2026, we're expecting the, which would be June 30, 2026. We're expecting on the police side to be about $3 million in reserves, and on the fire side, about $7 million in reserves.
Hi, sorry. And if I could just add to that, and remembering that the Fire Protection District has an El Cerrito contract required reserve that's within that $7 million. So that's a couple million dollars that we hold specifically for that purpose.
And to clarify how reserves operate is the local government revenues are very chunky. It's not like a business where you have sales every week or every day or every month. Local government agencies usually get two large, very large checks per year. One comes in December and one comes in April or January, May, depending on each county. That's when all the property tax revenues, the property tax payments that are due in December and in April are received, and then they're being sent out to the agencies. So even though at the end of the year, we're showing pretty large, healthy balances, it doesn't mean that that balance stays the same throughout the year. They're drawing down reserves to pay the operating expenses, the payrolls, the rents, the maintenance of the equipment. And the balance goes down, 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 and then you get end of the year, January, and all of a sudden you get a big check and it goes back up. So then you're spending down and you get a big check, chunk again. So most government agencies, they maintain a very significant reserve just to make sure that they're able to function through the dry periods of that last several months in a row.
So do you want to bring those up? We're looking, we have about 36 people on Zoom, so we're also looking at questions or inquiries that we might have. While we're checking that, I want to make mention to all of you, again, I appreciate you being here, but this is a process, and we're having, the Police Protection District is having a special meeting next Thursday that will continue specifically on this process. And the Fire District, at their regular meeting on Wednesday, will have more discussion about continuing with the process. So we would encourage you, if you're interested, to continue to attend those either in person or on Zoom, to continue seeing how this flows through the legal process of what's called LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission, which oversees the ability to do a consolidation or a reorganization.
Yeah, if you could read the questions, I think that would be best.
All right, so this first one, why haven't you been including a study of the cost savings of combining administrative costs, including salaries of the two districts? It seems to me that the report is lopsided, only including one alternative. Not sure I understand exactly, but combining administrative costs. Okay. This was the alternative. It was limited to the RFP.
Right. So what we did was extensive interviews with the staff and the management of the districts. And part of the process was for the two districts to actually work on a consolidated org chart, what the district would look like in terms of the, if they choose to consolidate. Right. So, and we have a very detailed staffing model that follows that assumption. right? Where really every position is broken down, and I think it's a 12-page staffing model. We really go by each position, by each cost category, and there's a lot of them. Like, we look at every type of benefits. We look at you know, overtime. We look at uniform allowances, any types of incentives. So it's a very detailed model. In terms of this, the alternatives, we can only analyze the alternatives that the districts are willing to consider, right? So in essence, you can look at and come up with a bunch of different ways of running things. At the same time, you have to keep in mind that there is management and the organization that has to implement those policies. So we have to rely on the guidance from the staff of the districts in terms of how realistically they can manage an organization. And that's our analysis reflects what the districts are willing to do and able to do.
So this question David can answer. Where does funding for a police building fit into this analysis?
So at our board meeting on Thursday, a cost analysis of a police administrative building was done. The board was unanimous, not in that they voted on it, but their specific individual comments pointed at being unanimous and not doing anything about looking, moving forward with pursuing a new police building until after this consolidation either happens or stops. And what I really appreciated about the governing body for the police, the five members that sit on the police district board, is their recognition that it's really going to be up to a board of a consolidated district to determine how to spend funds, which goes along with what Dimitri's comments were, and whether that includes the expense of a new building is going to have to be place down the road to make that determination, obviously with input from the community as well. But the priority from our board is to see the consolidation take place and then allow that formed board to make future decisions on important things such as a building. I also have a question that I was sent by email. It says, has Ridgeline accounted for the full number of employees that will be required to run a consolidated board additional to what they presented? GM, HR, finance, public safety, for example, what about the clerk of the board, the assistants, etc.? And she mentions that she didn't have an opportunity to do it on Zoom. Do you want to answer that?
Right. So there's a section in the report that looks at the org chart of the potential long org chart of the consolidated district. And that's the org chart that has been reviewed and signed off on by the two boards. That's the direction that we've been given. And in making the decisions in terms of how many hours and what functions, the districts, they looked into what it will take to run the consolidated organization. And there's certain changes, you know, some position went from, you know, half time to three quarter of a time and things like that. So yes, that cost is accounted for.
So this other question, and you can let me know if you want to address it or we can. Could you speak more to how, if there is consolidation, there is more board involvement and responsibility? The plan seems to be to turn everything over to an expensive management team.
I would probably let you take that one.
I think as far as, and probably referring to that slide that you had on the board involvement and responsibility. So it's the fact that there's two separate boards right now with different focus. There would be one consolidated board with now all of the focus. They'd be involved in running police, fire, and parks and waste management as a single board. As far as turning it over to an expensive management team, we are actually having cost savings from the positions suggested. And on both sides, the halftime general managers would become one, general manager, full-time general manager. The finance HR functions would consolidate into one finance HR manager. And then the public safety coordinator, we have a slew of activities for that position. So I think that the board involvement and responsibility is the fact that they're going to be overseeing all of the operations of the district. And the management team, as we've shown, with not having to use consultants, will actually be saving money. Anything you want
to add? I'm going to add to that. I was responsible for a community in Kern County for almost 20 years, and we had 9 separate functions, similar to these, but a lot more responsibility for water, wastewater. We also had police. We didn't have fire, but with the 9 functions, our 5 board members were not overtaxed at all, and the staffing was what I would consider to be minimal compared to the dual roles that you see Mary and I doing and the clerks of the board doing, and trying to handle HR and trying to handle finances. So the work that Mary and I did with Dimitri on what is projected in the full consolidated report, we both feel very comfortable with it being very efficient.
Thank you, David. We did a study at the KPOA, which has continued for years. Just one critical aspect which addresses the question that Mary just answered and Dave addressed as well. Across the United States, virtually all cities have one board. Almost all of them, not quite all, have 5 members, and they're handling the finances for populations many, many times. I love astronomy, so I'll say astronomically larger than Kensington will ever be. In addition, I came from Massachusetts, and in Massachusetts, there's an explicit law that says cities, towns will all be run by 5 district managers, or actually town managers. And I went to town meetings. I've noticed some comments over the years. How can we possibly have effective meetings given how long many of the meetings are, especially in the fire district? Our observation on that is that much of the extra time has been spent arguing over consolidation. And so after consolidation, that time disappears. And we'll be able to cruise in orbit like the 8 or 9, depending on if you believe Pluto is a planet, calmly cruise around the sun. Thank you.
David, there was a follow-up question on the police building. Would or how would the cost be affected, but whether or not there is consolidation?
If consolidation does not move forward, the board would, and I can't speak for the board, so all I can say is the board would have to consider that in relation to where we're currently situated and our expenses. I think Dimitri made it very clear. As a standalone entity, I'm convinced that we're going to operate at a break even, but with no capital expenses that we can afford. So if the consolidation does not go move forward, the board would have to say, okay, are we going to go to the voters and ask for money for a new building, or are we just going to forget about it for the next 4 or 5 years? And that's a board decision. That's not a general manager decision. If consolidation takes place, the same thing is going to happen. It's a board decision, but there would be more financial options even in regard to borrowing money. And of course, the residents would have to still be and should be included in that discussion on what you want. That's a hard, I mean, you can't give a firm answer to that question because it's in the future and it's a board, it's a governing body decision. Anything else? Hold on a second, because we don't want to upset people on Zoom by not hearing you.
Why? What is the big problem of putting the police department in with the fire department in the new building?
Well, I'll be brief on that and happy to have a discussion with anyone that wants that, but they won't fit. That's the problem. So with that, Dimitri, any final words?
Well, I wish the community all the best in making the right decisions.
And we appreciate Dimitri's, yes.
Yeah.
And Mary and I will always be happy to answer any questions that might pop up at 2 o'clock for you about this. Feel free to reach out to us. We're not going to answer you at 2 o'clock in the morning, but we'll get back to you. Thank you for your attending. Thank you for those on Zoom.